Thank you for tuning in to
TCN, Talk Line Communications Network Radio, America's number one Jewish program.
What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been there?
Good evening and welcome back to Mask's weekly radio show on Family Matters. Mask, Mothers and Fathers Alliance Saving Kids, kids of all stages for all mental health issues, including addictions. If you know somebody that needs a referral, or a therapist, or an inpatient, outpatient clinic, a rehab, please call MASS. You can call anonymously. Every call is confidential. Our number is 718-758-0400. And if you know somebody that is looking for a new school for next year for their child, call us. We have a yeshiva liaison available to find that school that will best suit your child's needs. Again, maybe you want to write our number down. I'll repeat it. It is 718-758-0400. Maybe you want to give it to your friend, a neighbor, maybe someone you sit next to in shul. Please call us. We are here from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. to help your family get the referral or join a support group for parents. And tonight, we have with us a neighborhood doctor who had the courage to pick up the phone, him and his wife, and call Mass when they were struggling with their family member. So I would like to welcome on tonight, Doctor, thank you for being on with us tonight. It does say MASC is Mothers and Fathers Aligned Saving Kids. So thank you, Dad, for calling in tonight and being on our radio show.
Thank you for having me.
So we're talking about a 17-year-old young lady who was always, you know, lovely little girl growing up. What made you and your wife pick up the phone to call Mask the first time? Please share.
So it actually started out with innocent conversation between my wife and one of her friends, who mentioned that, oh, I've seen your daughter hanging out with a boy in the neighborhood. And my wife's like, what do you mean you've seen that? Oh, for the past 2 months, I've seen it. Of course, my wife is shocked, saying, and you knew this for 2 months and you didn't tell us? So at that point, you know, before we confronted her, me and my wife were like shocked, hurt, felt violated. And just because we're from a type of community which is more religious, and that type of behavior is not acceptable. So before we confronted her, we didn't know what to do. And both of us are educated, so we knew that we couldn't just, you know, attack her because that's not going to accomplish anything. So we called up MASC. After, I'm not sure how we got the referral, but we called them up in a panic in the middle of the, I remember it was late at night, and somebody picked up, which was, I was surprised. And I forgot who it was. I think it was Esther, I think. And anyway, so we spoke to her and told her our situation, and we wanted to confront her and tell her how it's bad and how this and how that. And Esther said, before, you know, and we went over exactly how to speak to her and how not to push things away. Because one of the things that was the most important part of this whole thing is for us as parents to realize that we have an opportunity to either pull her closer or push her way deeper into whatever direction she was going that we didn't know about. And the choice was ours, which way it's going to be. So the first conversation I remember, I first got, we had a discussion with Esther. So we called her in. I spoke to her. I remember I said, we found this out. Of course, she says, it's not true. Who's telling you this? I don't even. And then we didn't say that we're going to throw you out. We didn't say that, we're going to, take away privileges or whatever it is. We were actually very calm that first meeting, saying that we know about this and then we're going to have another meeting. We'll talk about it later. That went okay. And then before we had the next meeting, we went to groups. There happened to be a group meeting that a week. So we went and discussed with, I forgot where it was, we drove to Brooklyn in the basement with a few other people there, and we were talking about our issues and what, listening to other people, how they dealt with it. And the decision was we were going to, bring her close and tell her we love her and show her we love her and hope that, through that she'll want to go towards us and not towards the other direction. And I remember, she came, we met her, we're all prepared now. And even if you're prepared, you can't really, talk about it. It's very difficult. So we brought her in, me and my wife, we talked to her. We said, we know that you were doing these things. And we used phrases we learned like, we see that this is very important to you because you're doing this behind our back so long. You're afraid to tell us. So it must be that's important to you. And something that's important to you is important to us. And then, of course, her eyes opened up. But then we went further saying, listen, if a boy in your life is something that you really need now, then, there's no reason why you have to go hide it. We love you the way you are. We're going to accept you. Bring him over, have him come over and things like that. Now, part of the conversation was also, we brought her to a doctor, explained to her exactly what. Now, this all started when she was 15, when we found out about this. So we brought her to a doctor. A doctor explained to her everything regarding the birds and the bees, whether she knew about it, she didn't know about it. We wanted a full explanation. I kept reiterating, interaction with boys. There's only one thing the boy wants, and et cetera, et cetera. But we said, he can come over, things like that. And then we found out that, he didn't want to come over. He was actually kind of shocked that we were so accepting. And I think I could tell by his being shocked that he probably had some ideas up his sleeve that I just ruined, because instead of me being confrontational with my daughter, forcing her to go into his arms, accepting his arms, I was actually more accepting, so that when she had to choose between going to her father and a mother who feed her, clothe her, buy her stuff, as opposed to this random boy who maybe bought her, a baseball cap or a pocket chain or something like that. And that's all they get from that. And it's an illegal, and she knows it's an illegal type of interaction. She'd rather come to us because we will offer more. One of the things we learned from ESC was you have to develop a relationship with your child. If you develop a relationship, then they can grow into the house like you want, as opposed to away from the house like you don't want. And the biggest challenge in developing a relationship was changing yourself as a parent. Because remember, your child, you had ideas, you had the goals for them. You wanted them to be a certain cookie-cutter way. And when they don't follow that cookie-cutter way, then you get upset because it's not fair. You put all this effort into it. And when you, through masks, meetings, as well as I had Das Torah, I was able to ask, on the spot questions too, if I had a particular situation, you were able to grow myself. And when I grew in myself, I was able to accept my daughter. understanding that, you know, kids who do these things, they're not doing it because they're just stupid. They're not doing it because they're just ignorant. Because remember, you educated them because, you know, I have other children in the family and everyone else seems to be following the path. Why is she not? So I know that I've educated properly because the other ones went through her age and didn't have this problem. So it must be there's something different with her. Either the education we gave didn't penetrate for into her head, whatever the reason, or she has different ideals, or she's questioning things differently, which she hasn't gotten the answers for, or she had some sort of trauma, which we found out that there was trauma from being in class. One of the teachers was verbally abusive, and she took that as, well, all religion becomes abusive, and then down that path. So she, so once you accept that, then it changes how you talk to her. You know, if the skirt comes short or goes above the knee, or the shirt goes above the elbow, you don't have to tell her that, you know, the skirt's supposed to be below the knee, because she knows that. You taught her that. The other kids know that. She's doing it on purpose. Either she's doing it because she doesn't feel it's necessary, or she's doing it because to be spiteful, to see what you're going to react. And if you don't react, then it's not fun anymore. She may not do it, or she may continue doing it until she's ready to accept it. And this has been 2 years, and now we're 2 years later. Since that time, over the years, I've developed a relationship with her. I took her, you know, they say take her out on activities. You know, we did, like, you know, some crazy type of extreme sports, if you want to say, where, you know, maybe took her to a shooting range, or I took her jet skiing, something that was like something I would never do, but she needed that, so she got that, and it was cool because they, you know, daddy would never do such a thing, and yet he's taking me out on jet skiing. That's crazy. But, you know, in any event, I became cool. And then all of a sudden, the boy really wasn't that interesting anymore because he wasn't offering her anything. Because, you know, in a relationship, the kids don't understand it. Us parents, we do understand it. A committed relationship is a lot of work, a lot of commitment, a lot of sacrifice. And at that age, they didn't want to do that. They didn't want to sacrifice a relationship. And then each side has to have a relationship, and they're too young for that, you know. So eventually, she dropped the boy, and she doesn't need. She it was silly, you know. Either he only wants one thing, and if, you know, because again, I've been telling her all the time that, you know, they only want one thing, and once they get it, they move on. And sure enough, you know, when the time was right, and he was trying, she was armed with education, knowing that, you know, that the only wants one thing, and all this was fake to begin with. He's not willing to be a committed person. So now we're up to, you know, we're 2 years later. She's we still have her challenges. You know, they change now. At least she, you know, when she leaves the house, she says, "I'm going to so and so's house." You know, she doesn't come back in an hour. She comes back 3 or 4 hours later. But at least I know where she is for at least half the time. But it's always partially true. And the biggest thing we've gained is that me and my wife, are not as, you know, walking on eggshells. We're not always afraid. I mean, it's a little bit, we're afraid we're going to push her away, but we're less afraid because we're armed with tools how to try and bring her closer.
Doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Doctor, I have a question for you. Are you and your wife on the same page? Do you both agree to how you've been handling your daughter?
So it's an interesting question. So part of the, I wouldn't say the problem, but part of the factors which maybe contributed a little bit to this particular child having this difficulty was me and my wife didn't see eye to eye all the time. And we were okay with talking about it, maybe in front of the kids, whatever. And we always made up afterwards because, you know, we were adults. But the kids, some of them internalized it, some of them. So maybe that was part of the problem. So we took advice from MASC, and we went to couples counseling just so that we can get on the same page. And what's interesting is we learned that we don't have to be on the same page, that it's okay that I parent a little bit differently than her as long as the goal is the same and I don't put her down and she doesn't put me down. So, for example, one of the contentions we have is, you know, whether a child can sit in the front seat or has to sit in the back seat. So, and Mike, I let them, if they're a certain height, they can sit in the front seat. My wife is very against it. No, they can't sit in the, they have to sit in the back seat. So through the therapy, we were came up to an acceptance that, you know, in my car, I could let them sit in the front seat, and it's okay, and she's okay with that when she's not around. And if they're going in her car, they have to sit in the back seat because her rules are that she doesn't let. And it's okay that we have different rules because it's okay that we're different. And, you know, and as long as we are have a positive direction and there's no negativity, it's okay. You know, we both agree that we want to unconditionally love our daughter. We want her to do better. I'm actually a little bit better at the whole, I mean, I call it a mind game. But it has to be more than a mind game. You have to, you know, I always look for opportunities to make a positive experience. You know, like, for example, you know, she came home from school and she was in a bad mood because she didn't do well on a test. So, you know, average responses would be, well, if you would have studied better instead of staying up till 3 o'clock in the morning on your iPod, you would have done better. And then, see, it's all your fault. That's a typical response. Now, with a kid in pain like this, I have to look for every opportunity to make him, to develop the relationship. So my answer was, wow, you must feel so bad that you didn't do well on the test, which is invalidating her feelings. And then I could say, then I said something like, well, how can I help you so we can, you know, do better or something like that. So I was the good guy, and the teacher who gave it the bad mark was the bad guy. Now, I don't need to make it good guy, bad guy, but you always want to be the positive person so that she wants to come towards you whenever she has a problem, whenever you'd rather her, you know, she has a question about something that maybe she feels uncomfortable asking. You don't want her to go to a random friend who'll give her an answer that's beneficial to them, whereas coming to you and you'll give them an answer that is beneficial to her. And that's something that, you know, because when she was in the tkufa of the boys, they brought up certain topics. I'm not going to say, but they brought up certain topics which she had questions on. And only because I had the rapport with her developing, she was okay asking me. I mean, in the beginning, she asked me, like, carefully. She was afraid I was going to be upset because it was such a type of question that no one should be asking. But once she saw that I was not cool with it because I had to pretend, but I was, like, explaining to her very, you know, as a doctor, I explained it all, you know, medically and, you know, very, very, you know, scientifically, that she had an understanding of it, and she wasn't fooled into, you know, some whatever, you know, activities the other, you know, party wanted to make. Did I answer the question?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Doctor, you mentioned Das Torah. We always recommend that families go, if they're religious, Jewish, and they want, they go to their rabbi or, you know, their mentors to discuss what the therapist at Mass parent group suggests. How difficult was it for you to take off your mask and actually go and talk about all these most sensitive issues, both to your doctor, your child's doctor, and to your rabbi?
So, actually, my regular rabbi I actually have Baruch Hashem, I'm involved in a lot of different things, so I have different types of people to speak to. I actually had a kiruv of that I was able to speak to a little bit. He didn't answer all my questions. I didn't feel as comfortable, but you know, I felt this as like a continuum of a different disease process eventually, where they start off maybe a certain level and all the way up to a very bad level where people are doing drugs and off the derech and things like that, whereas people are going in that direction. So I felt that if I speak to somebody who's dealing with them already when they're very far, he's trying to pull them back, I could find out what pushed them in the wrong direction and maybe prevent making those errors. But so then I asked my regular of where Shiloh's to, and I got put down. Like, I was like, asking a question. He's like, no, I'm not answering. I don't like this. I like what you're saying. And pretty much hung up the phone on me, which was very surprising because I knew this rough for over like 10 years, and it was very upsetting. And then when I spoke to this Kiruvav, he says, you don't understand. You can't ask this type of Rav these questions because this is not, he doesn't do this. He doesn't know. And you can't blame him either. I was very upset. I wasn't going to call him ever again for anything. But after I spoke to him, I thought, I understood that, you know, he was not prepared to do this, and it's better that he didn't give me advice. It wouldn't have been the right advice. So then I found a Rav of mine, which through I found it that somebody else had an issue, and I actually knew the Rav from years ago. And when I spoke to him, he actually had great hadracha. He understood the whole concept of the child more than pushing him away. So that, you know, he was actually had good advice. And basically, I needed advices. Okay, this is what she did. How do I deal with it? Then he would say, okay, this is what you say. This is what you do. Accept it. Ignore it. You can't ignore this, you know. And just to give me a hadracha until I got comfortable in my own skin to make good decisions in an area which I'm unfamiliar with. You know, it goes back to the beginning of, you know, you're seeing a child who you had different goals for, and they're completely throwing it in your face, and you're frustrated. And you need to get control of yourself before you can help them. And one of the things that you need to do is learn skills how to do it. I mean, I did a lot of research both on, you know, how to deal with the defiant child, how to deal with the child that sneaks out at night, you know, negative consequences, positive consequences, a lot of research. And it all came up to the same thing. If you have a good rapport with them, they're going to listen because they want to. If you don't, they're going to lie to you and do what they want. And then one of the things I always thought is, oh, maybe she's being convinced. She's, you know, she's going out to the park with these people. They're convincing her to be there. She's really, really good. And that's true. She's really, really good. But she's not convinced to be there. She wants to be there. If she didn't want to be there, she wouldn't. She'd be home. So you got to give her a reason to be home. You know, make an activity that you know she's going to go out. I mean, one time she wanted to go somewhere, and there was going to be like some sort of get together at the park at a certain time, and everyone's going to be there, and her friends, and the staff, blah, blah, blah. So, and we were in the beginning, we were nervous, we didn't know what to do because it was late at night, we weren't sure what time to be there. So, me and my wife decided we're going to go out to dinner at like a restaurant exactly that time. And now she has to make a choice. Does she want to go out to the fancy restaurant, or does she want to go to play in the park? And you know what they chose. They wanted to go to the fancy restaurant to get to choose something. So I gave her a choice that she couldn't turn down. You know, and I do that often. You know, same thing with going to the, taking her out to the shooting range or something. It was very expensive, like $200. But it was, it was something she looked forward to. She still talks about it, you know. And it's you have to give them something else to latch onto. You know, and slowly they'll come back, but you need to give them a string. Some kids, I understand from the groups that, you know, they're really, really far along. But as long as they know that you're still there for them, that when the time is right for them to come back, when they've either exhausted their whatever they're doing, they're going to turn around and look for something to pull, to grab onto. And if you're there, they'll come right back to you. And whether it's a year, whether it's 2 years, whether it's 3 years, One parent said it was 6 years, 6.5 years, and then all of a sudden something changed, and they were there, and they came back to them because they were always there for them, and they knew they were doing them. They knew the child knew that they were hurting their parents. They just couldn't help themselves. They knew this. They knew that they loved them, and they came back to them. It took them 6 years, but they did it. They accomplished it. You know.
And they always advocated for their child, no matter what. Which gave them a sense of that they're unconditionally loved and that they'll be there for them no matter how many times they let the parents down. You know, Doctor, we talk about the child that's acting out or taking a different path from what you and your wife have chosen for yourselves and your family. Let's talk about the siblings. How has it changed your family, the other children, seeing this child acting differently than what you would like?
So that is a challenge. That is a challenge because depending on the age group, she's about the middle child, so we have some children above her, some children below her, both boys and girls, and it's challenging. Because on the one hand, you're afraid, well, if I give in to her all the time, then I'm going to have to give in to the other children. And they're going to see that, oh, she's getting away with stuff. and then they're going to want to get away with things. And we have that fear. And then, you know, shidduchim, you worry about shidduchim. What's going to be? Shidduch is going to come, and then they're going to see this, and they're going to be turned off. And it's interesting, you know, you hear the story about, you know, the Rav says that, you know, if somebody comes to a shidduch and they have this type of child, so the question you ask the parents is, would you look at the parents is, well, how do they treat this child? Do they accept him or do they shun him? If they accept him or her, then it's a great shidduch. If they push him away, then it's not a good shidduch, because that means they don't care about their child, and they don't want to try and help him. I mean, and the best example is, you know, my oldest child, I was, you know, we spoke to them at the time they weren't married. We spoke to them and we said, listen, you know, we told them about what's going on. And then we say, listen, you know, we're worried about shidduchim. And right away, the child said, don't worry about, because we have two children, don't worry about us. We'll get our shidduch. This is not going to be a problem. And like very, very, very straight.
Well, for those that don't know what shidduch is, I just want to say the matchmaking. Yes, for those that don't know.
Right. So, and what happened is within a year they both got married. So, you know, it didn't affect anything. You know, and they and one of the things you're afraid of, well, how are they going to dress? Are they going to dress, you know, by one of the meetings, and one of the people were talking about a bar mitzvah, and the son came in dressed, you know, different than the usual, and how do you deal with it? And then they gave a great example. They said, you know, people come over, like nobody notices that, you know, the boy's wearing an orange jacket or something like that in the chasana, and then with a bar mitzvah, like nobody knows that. But they come over and says, oh, you know, your son's wearing an orange jacket. So they gave us tools. Answer them. Thank you for your concern, and walk away. Thank you for your concern, and walk away. And one of the things we have as parents is how do you deal with that? We're nervous. How do we do? We're not trained in that, because it's not a normal thing. But going to mask in the meetings, they gave us some tools, so we were comfortable answering that question and moving on, and not having it stare the whole simcha.
Doctor, I want to thank you very, very much for being on tonight and being so brutally honest about everything and sharing your journey. And I want to wish you and your daughter, your wife, your family, you should always have good health and nachas the way you would like from all of your family.
Thank you very much. And whoever's listening, if you have something like this, call Mask. They're there to help. Everything is confidential, and it's going to help you. You're not alone. There are a lot of people out there with the same problems that you have, and there's no reason why you need to do it alone. And you can succeed, and you and your child can succeed and move forward.
Yes, Shakoa. And I would like to wish everybody a very good evening, a beautiful Shabbos, and always remember, hang in, hold on, and we're still virtually hug tight. Thank you, and have a good night.
Hello, I'm Dr. Raphael Kelman. I'm an internist. I'm a graduate of Albert Einstein College of Medicine. I trained in holistic, functional, and integrative medicine. I'm the author of several books, including On the Microbiome. And my focus is, and I specialize in thyroid disorders, Hashimoto's, various autoimmune disorders, gastrointestinal disorders, fatigue, and chronic unresolved issues. I find the root causes and treat with both the best of conventional and mostly with holistic natural compounds. By testing deeper, we can heal deeper. I offer a free 10-minute consultation, and you can listen to me every Tuesday night on the radio between 7 and 8 p.m. on WSNR. And also on the internet, talklinecommunications.com, every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. If you have any questions, or if you want to make an appointment, or even the free 10-minute consultation, please call me at 1-833-MD-HELP-ME, 833-MD-HELP-ME.
Did you ever consider hosting your own radio or television show? We can help you get on the air. Talkline Communications works with broadcasters as well as with TV and radio stations in New York and nationwide that lease time, all at competitive rates. We work with doctors, lawyers, and other professionals, as well as with ethnic broadcasters. For more information about hosting your own radio or TV show, please call 212-769-1925. 212-769-1925. And out of New York, call 1-866-MY-TV-SHOW. That's 1-866-MY-TV-SHOW.